This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local News Talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Bill Rock, thank you very much, and a happy Friday. Good morning to you all. Welcome aboard. Yes, we do have Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us this morning on the telephone. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. Rain in the forecast.
Yes, indeed. Well, you also got people down here, and I think you're probably smart staying close to home this morning up there at City Hall. When did you get the word that Zuccotti Park was going to, or the Brookfield Properties was not going to press the issue?
But just before midnight last night, we had talked to them. The issue here is that this is not a public park. If this was a city park, we have regulations that we can enforce and that the courts will back us on. We don't allow people to sleep and set up tents in the park. There are curfews, some at dusk, some at 1 in the morning, depending on the park. And city rules apply. And if you notice, when protesters go to a place like Washington Square Park, which is a city park, in all fairness, they obey the rules because they know we'll enforce them. This is something different. This is a privately owned piece of property owned by Brookfield Properties. And they got it and converted it into a park, I think, as part of zoning negotiations for other pieces of property. And the agreement was made said public access 24/7, and the courts would back them on that. Zuccotti Park has become something that is a place for protesters of one point of view, but unfortunately, because there's so many there and a number have just basically moved in, people with other points of view don't have a chance to use the park and to express their views or to not express a view and going through. As you know, nobody's been a bigger defendant of the First Amendment than I have. I think people have a right to speak. It's one of the great things about America. But the city's role is to protect the public health and safety and to enforce the law. And while I do understand the frustrations that the protesters have, the bottom line is I don't necessarily agree with their message or their targets. Here in New York City, Wall Street is a vitally important industry. Its tax dollars are how we pay our cops and firefighters and teachers. And you see some of the municipal unions trying to help the protesters. Helping them is one thing, but destroying our tax base just isn't good. Half of the people that work on Wall Street earn something less than $72,000 a year. And, you know, if you look at DiNapoli's report yesterday or the day before, 10,000 more job losses in the finance here in the city, that's not good for our economy. Now, in the case of the protesters, for close to a month they were there, and I actually took a walk through the park night before last. Nice people. Everybody wanted to shake your hand. People offered food. One guy offered something more than that, but I said no thank you. there's no question. The park was not designed to be a place to sleep. And Brookfield has some regulations that they put out that said they want to enforce, didn't enforce for a while. And, Brookfield could have waited and just eventually people get on to other things. They chose to say they wanted to clean the park and would obviously need police department help. We did work with them. It was their choice that they wanted to go ahead and do it. And then yesterday, as of 8 o'clock at night, they were going ahead to do it. But as of midnight, they called and said they wanted to postpone the cleaning operations to see if they can work out an agreement with the protesters. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. I'm not sure what it means either.
Well, we're going to be monitoring the situation carefully going forward. And make no mistake, we will do what's necessary to maintain public health and safety. But there just is a limit to what we can do in a private park, and if they want to take a couple days to try to work something out, they're welcome to do that. I've asked what happens if they cannot, and the answer I got was that then they would want to go ahead and do exactly what they were going to do this morning. From our point of view, it will be a little bit harder, I think, at that point in time to provide police protection, but we have the greatest police department in the world, and we will do what is necessary. And
as you have seen, the crowd has swollen this morning.
That's, you'd expect that. If you're going to say you're going to do something on Monday, the crowd will be even bigger. The bottom line is a handful of, it's a big crowd, but in context of 8.4 million people in the city, it's a relatively small number, and they have been acting peacefully, and that's fine. And nobody was trying to take away, in all fairness, Brookfield was not trying to take away their rights to protest 24/7. What Brookfield simply wanted to do was to clean the park and enforce some rules that let people who want to express views or not express views all have their First Amendment rights, rather than just one group having its First Amendment rights.
Let me ask you the question that has been asked by some of those people that are in there, and that had to do with the sweeping and the not allowing the tents, the bed rolls, etc., to come back in, and not sleeping on the benches. Are those rules that are in place now?
Brookfield has promulgated those rules. It's their property. They have a right to do it, but as of the moment, they are not being enforced. That was what, in fact, Brookfield said they wanted to do this morning, and the city said, we, of course, will provide the appropriate level of police protection for their workers. But there's a lot of people that live in the neighborhood that say they can't use the park, and there are people of other points of views.
And the businesses that surround the park say that they're getting hammered.
That is true. I was told this morning by somebody, oh, that's not true. There's just a couple of them, and we had a congressman I gather that said, oh, it's much more important than that. Well, in the end, I'm not sure that it is more important than that. We have a right to make sure that everybody. The First Amendment applies to everybody, and we've just got to go ahead and enforce it. I think what happened, my understanding, is that Brookfield got lots of calls from many elected officials threatening them and saying, if you don't stop this, we'll make your life more difficult. If those elected officials would spend half as much time trying to promote the city and get jobs to come here, we would go a long ways towards answering the concerns of the protesters rather than just...
Mr. Mayor, did I understand you correctly that some of the political entities called Brookfield and said, you've got to leave these people alone?
I wasn't privy to the conversation,
right.
But I'm told they were inundated with lots of elected officials who called, and I don't know which ones, and, I assume Brookfield's going to say, it's personal or private, and they're not going to tell anybody who, but I don't think there's any question that a lot of they say they got many calls.
Right. Okay. I understand. So is it just wait and see? Is that it?
Brookfield said that they want to take a couple of days to try to negotiate something. I think if you get through a couple of days, the question is, what would be possible, and is it more complex 2 days from now to do what they had said they wanted to do today? I mean, in the end, you come back, John, the city does not have the legal right to go in and to close the park unless the public safety is clearly threatened. And I don't think our health department would say that there's a danger of plague or there's nobody getting beaten up at the moment, or, and hopefully that'll continue. The protesters, in all fairness, have been very peaceful there. But it is a very big crowd, and it's one point of view. And there, as you point out, there are stores and neighbors who want to have their point of view. But I think the longer this goes on, the worse it is for our economy. You just go down and talk to the stores in the neighborhood. There's one or two that are selling more pizza, but most of them say that this really is hurting them. There are neighbors, people who live there, who say they don't have a right to go about their business and not protest or say something else. But in the end, it is Brookfield's decision.
Mr. Mayor, when you walked through there the other night, did you get a sense that there was some sort of leadership? Did you speak with anybody that had some sort of authority?
You know, John, I mean, I walked from one end to the other. I shook an awful lot of hands. I declined an awful lot of food, which people were generously offering. It was supper time. But it's very hard to tell. People, quote, in the know, say there is no central leadership, although what you're seeing now is some of the professional organizations who lead a lot of these protests trying to get control. And
there's also some rabble-rousers down there. We've seen some scuffles on the television, and I suspect there are people that are showing up looking to make trouble.
Yeah, I mean, there's always. Now, in all fairness, that shouldn't detract from the rights of most of the protesters who are behaving peacefully and within the law. Brookfield's the one that has to make the decision. And, you know, it's getting expensive for us in terms of the cost of police. That's going to be reflected in our budget. We just, you know, as you know, these are going to be very tough budget times. But also you're going to have, there has to be some resolution eventually. And we'll just have to wait and see what Brookfield wants to do. I assured there, I talked to one of the top people there this morning and assured him that whatever their decision, we should not be pressuring them. I made a point of saying that our staff last night was under strict instructions from me not to pressure them one way or another. This was their decision, and our job is not to pressure them to tell them what they should do with their property, but if they, whatever they want to do, we would have and we will provide the appropriate police protection. Unfortunately, it gets a little bit more dangerous the bigger the crowds, and it certainly gets more expensive.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. Take a break right here. We'll take care of a little business. We will get back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg. That rolls it back. 80s bumper music Friday here on the John Gambling Show. Phil Collins in the air tonight. You remember the 80s, Mr. Mayor?
I do. But I remember the 60s and even the 50s, John.
All right. We've pretty much covered, I think, what's going on here in Zuccotti Park. What's going on over in Brooklyn with the sex attacks? What does Kelly tell you?
We're trying to find the perp or possibly multiple. I don't know that it's multiple as one guy we're looking for. You know, all of these things, eventually you do find. You do get people make mistakes in terms of they do it when there's somebody around that they didn't count on, and you catch them. And we're going to make no mistake about it. Crime continues to come down, but there's still some bad people around, John. Still have to go after them.
And I know that when you have a spate of crimes like this, they actually throw extra resource at it, right?
Yeah, although, you know, if you have a cop in every corner, there's no reason to put two cops in every corner. Some of the stuff you can do with brute force, but some is just good wasting leather and whatever the expression is. Cops just going out and talking to people and keeping their eyes open, and then all of a sudden you get a break. Somebody saw something, remembered somebody, quietly wants to talk to a cop and says, hey, go look here or there. And yeah, the police department works very hard, and a lot of it is intellect, not just numbers.
I know one of the things that you have mentioned here on the program and other places many times over the long haul is that you think it's important, and you work are working very hard. In fact, you've even offered up some resource to bring a major university, major engineering university. There was more talk this week about CCNY and Stanford University.
City University and Stanford are partnering. There are some other partnerships that are in the process. Everybody's got to have their final proposals in. I forget the dates, but I think it's the end of this month, and before the end of the year, we will make a decision. The city is going to give land and up to $100 million in infrastructure, and everything else is going to have to be built by private money raised by the universities. This will be an enormous boon to the construction industry because these schools will build a lot of buildings, but long-term, it is enormously important to the city that the city city have the kind of jobs that people want to have, good paying jobs with benefits. And technology is the wave of the future. And so somebody building an applied science or engineering school here, if it's the one of the best in the world, that really is going to make a big difference.
Has location been decided?
We've offered three or four different locations, and where they want to go is one of the things that will be considered. It was in their they have to put it in their proposal, and the committee that's going to select will also take a look at their ability to raise funds, because if they can't raise the money, they can't build. So, you know, if you look at a combination like Stanford and CCNY, City University would have a much tougher time raising $1 billion or whatever the investment would be than Stanford. Stanford's got an extensive group of very wealthy alumni who are very generous to Stanford. And I think they feel confident that those alumni would be there and help them, as would some people who are not Stanford alumni but just love New York City.
Have you had indication when talking this up, which you've been doing for quite some time, that New York business, New York industry would be willing to throw in some dollars?
Listen, number one, this is Seth Pinsky and Bob Steele's idea. Seth Pinsky is the president of the Economic Development Corporation, and Bob Steele is the deputy mayor for economic development. And when you talk to them, they tell me that there's an enormous support from businesses throughout the city and from people who own those businesses and who have money and are, you know, New York is the home of philanthropy. There's a lot of wealthy, generous people here. And some of them, I think, would probably be good targets for a Stanford fundraising call or somebody else. You know, some of these universities know how to go out and raise money. Their endowments are enormous, but it just takes an enormous amount of money for a great school. There's so many buildings they need and so much staff, and most of the money comes privately. Federal government puts some money into, and the state governments into city university and state university. And what's controversial these days is some of these online universities that are for profit. But most money from big private universities is raised by from generous people.
What's your thought on the for-profit schools?
I just don't know enough. I think some that obviously overpromise and people sign up, think that they're getting an education that will help them get a job, but there's not a lot of evidence that very many people coming out the other side that get good jobs because of them. Part of it is because of federal programs that give you loans, and I think if you want to stop some of the abuses, you probably should start with the federal government's loan programs, because if you could do that, then the private universities wouldn't be able to promise things that people wouldn't be able to go and under false assumptions. But the bottom line is, we all agree education is vitally important to your ability to thrive and enjoy the great American dream. And not everybody's going to go to Harvard, Yale, or Princeton. There are plenty of other great schools. And I think some of the online schools are probably pretty good. But, you know, there are bills pending. I don't know what the law is, but even law schools today try to show that if you go to their law school, you will get jobs. And in fact, there's been some controversy as to whether some of the numbers some of the law schools have used have been inflated. Now, you know, the top draw law schools, that's not the case. But after that, you go down the list and it becomes very competitive for students. People go to law schools thinking that with an education, they will LLD, they'd be able to get a good job. And the schools try to say, if you come to our school, here's the record. And I think that's useful information for people, and they have a right to know. But you got to make sure that the numbers aren't fraudulent.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I've got another break to take care of. You can put your feet up for just a second here. We'll get right back to you. 800. Oh, man, remember this one. Lionel Richie. Also did the Super Bowl back then, too, in 1983 with this. Fiesta forever. all night long, come dancing away. Mr. Mayor, good morning. Glad to have you aboard here. Thank you very much.
Happy to do it.
On a busy day for you, I am sure. One more question, though, back to Zuccotti Park. We talked about the overtime last week. It obviously has increased, and there was some reference to, you know, how its effect on police budget. Anything new on that, on the police class?
Every dollar we spend is an effect on the budget. There's no question that you have to provide more protection when the group of people gather. Now, keep in mind, that's our job. So a lot of it's built into the budget. We assume that there'll be X number of events that the police have to come and provide control or protection or go after some bad guys, whatever the case may be. When there are these events, overtime is one of the things you have to use because you just don't have the staff that we have normally to protect the city. Still has to be spread around the city and protect the city. So you've got to call in extra people who you can't just have a whole bunch of people sitting around. So we use the same people. They work overtime, people that had gone off their shifts or whatever. And, it all adds up, John. And, you know, we're going to have some big budget problems here going forward. We all know that. It would be great if we didn't have to spend the money. I don't think that that is the important thing here. The most important thing here is that people have the right to their First Amendment rights, and that is the right to protest, the right to say different things, and the right to not protest and go about your business peacefully. All three things are protected by the First Amendment, and we got to make sure they do that and people can do it safely.
United States Attorney's Office here in Manhattan yesterday said that the lack of wheelchair accessible taxi cabs is a violation of Americans with Disabilities Act, and they want to force the city to have more accessible taxi cabs of the 13,000. That's going to be difficult. What's your reaction?
I think the cab industry will fight that tooth and nail. There's when the cabs are big enough for a wheelchair, a lot of the cab drivers say that the passengers sit farther away and they can't establish a dialogue and they get lower tips. But the real answer to that, John, is the cabs that we've picked so far are easier for handicapped people that are not wheelchair bound. And if you are in a wheelchair, the Justice Department, I don't think, has ever been to New York. You go out in the streets, you just cannot take generally a wheelchair out into the street and try to hail a cab. It's dangerous, and a lot of the cab drivers just would, I think, pretend that they didn't see you. Some will, but some won't, and it's very hard to get them to stop, pull over, and safely get you and your wheelchair in. So what we've come up with is a system where there would be a lot of wheelchair accessible cabs, but they would be
dispatch system.
Dispatch, that's the word I was looking for. The dispatch would be to pick you up when you need a wheelchair. And we have this borough taxi bill that we're trying to get through Albany. The governor's helping us. Many people oppose because it adds hundreds of new wheelchair accessible cabs. A lot of these drivers don't want to do it. It's more expensive for them. And they say, you know, not our responsibility. But the bottom line is we want to make sure that everybody, those that need extra help, get it, and those that don't get it, and that it's all the services are provided at a price that people can afford and in all boroughs. Our problem at the moment is the yellow cabs really only operate south of 96th Street in Manhattan.
Any new updates on that bill? That new bill for the
passed by the Senate, passed by the Assembly. The governor I talked to recently, a few days ago, and says there's a few tweaks that he thought might improve the bill. And if it does, that's great. But I have no reason to think that this bill isn't going to come into law. If you take a look, it's interesting. Some of the yellow cab drivers don't like it because they say it will hurt their revenues and hurt a taxi medallion today sells for $600,000-$700,000. I think when we originally gave out medallions and somebody made them transferable, nobody ever thought there'd be this enormous windfall. And there's actually a company, the ticker symbol is TAXI, appropriately, that owns a bunch of medallions. And I just looked at their stock yesterday or the day before. It was at a record high. So the marketplace doesn't think that this is going to hurt the yellow cab.
But the governor says he thinks it's going to go.
Governor was very encouraging, is a nice way to phrase
it. Did you see the story? I'm sure you did, and I'm sure you knew maybe even before you saw the story, that the rolls of the Medicaid rolls in the state of New York has now reached 5 million individuals?
You know, these programs, when they start, nobody thinks about how they'll grow and what they'll cost. And you should do that. And then some of them you may decide that, yes, it's a good idea. But a prescription drug plan, for example, is another one of these federal programs that started small. And Medicaid is moving up the sort of the economic ladder. It was originally designed for the poorest, and then with time, and then this happens with all these programs, we define it and keep opening it up, and once you get it into the middle class, it just gets harder and harder to take away. So everybody that wants the program wants to have more people involved in it and getting more benefits, because then it's less controllable by the federal government. But all this medical stuff, John, we have to face the fact that we cannot afford it. Social Security is a good example, although Social Security is a separate program and a separate fund, although there is no trust fund. The federal government just takes the money and spends it.
Do you have an idea how to reduce the cost? I mean, if you had the magic wand, how would you do it?
You know, interestingly enough, the experts say that the one state that has a medical plan that actually works is Massachusetts, put in by Romney when he was governor of Massachusetts. And, you know, today said, well, that was appropriate for the state back then, but it's not appropriate for the country. I don't know whether it's appropriate for the country, and I've never understood why he wanted to walk away from it. He should take credit for it. But all the experts say Massachusetts has come up with a combination that makes sure everybody gets coverage, but the costs are somewhat controlled. In the end, you got to decide how much young people are going to pay to support old people. And
Isn't that what we're seeing here in Zuccotti Park? To a degree.
Yeah, I suppose.
I'm not sure they've thought it through quite that far.
Yeah, I don't know that idea. I mean, yeah, when Social Security was started, it was something like 33-odd people that worked to support every person on Social Security, and life expectancy was 65 or 70, so that's why they picked numbers back in the mid-60s as to when you could get it. Today, life expectancy is in the 80s, and you have something like 3 people working for every person that gets Social Security, and that's going to go down to 2 and someday 1, and people say, oh, I paid in and I'm just getting my own money back. Well, number one, you didn't pay in as much as you're going to get back. And number two, the federal government spent it on other things. You should have been watching the store, because all they've done is taken the money and used it elsewhere for other government programs. So there isn't any fund. Your money's long since been spent. Now, you know, you can argue the government regardless has to honor a commitment, and they probably will. I think it's hard to see them walking away, nor do I think they should walk away. I think there is a commitment, but we cannot continue to do it the same ways. We should be raising the age slowly on Social Security. Otherwise, everybody that's working today is just going to have more and more taken out of their paychecks. And that's true of, you know, that this, in this case, Social Security was designed to help people in their retirement. But there are health care plans that have, in the context we're talking about, you can think of as the same thing, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, and lots of other federal programs. And we've got to focus, John, on preventing care. If you take a look, in America, we spend something like $7,500 per person per year on average for medical care. And if you look in Western Europe, they spend about $3,300 per person per year, and their life expectancy is greater than ours. on average. Now, there are exceptions, but on average. So the question is, what are we getting for our money? And when you say, okay, let's take a look, let's change how we do it, well, there's an awful lot of jobs of people providing the current service. And if you changed, and if you spend $3,300, let's assume your magic wand would let you provide great care for $3,300 instead of $75, an awful lot of jobs would go away.
You're right. No, it is the complicated issue.
All of these federal programs become jobs programs, and it's for the jobs for the people that provide it. And the military, enormous, aircraft carrier is built in 45 different states. Now, if you look at a map, most of those states aren't on the water, but rest assured, there's something built in each of them because that's the way that you can get Congress to approve it, and you can get Congress to not cut it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some folks on the phone with some questions. We will get to them. Journey on '80s Bumper Music Friday on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, we got some folks on the telephone here. We're going to start with Keith. Keith, you got the mayor. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
John, just want to let you know that you and team have a great program, and Mayor Bloomberg, I'd like to compliment you on giving up your time each week for us.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I have a question. You keep saying that the protest in Zuccotti Park is, you know, it's a private park, yet, you know, the police department is doing a great job keeping order down there. So my question is, you know, if it's a private park, why doesn't Brookfield provide the security to keep protesters in line?
Well, it is Brookfield's responsibility, but when Brookfield can't handle it, and, for example, somebody refuses to leave if they order them out, then it's trespassing, and then you call the police, and it's the police department to move in. Nobody thought that the police department's job is not to clean the park. It's not to make the rules. Brookfield wanted to go in this morning, move a quarter of the people out or off to the side, clean it, and then let them back in so that they could protest, but the rules would be they couldn't have their stoves and tents and sleeping bags or whatever they have there. And that's and the idea was if their workers, who were all uniform workers, so you could identify them, had met resistance, where people wouldn't obey the Brookfield rules on Brookfield property, then the police department would do what they're trained to do. Brookfield chose not to go in, and the police department doesn't, unless there is a threat to public safety, the police department does not have a right to go onto private property and enforce somebody's rules that hasn't asked you to do it.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you. And Keith, thank you very much as well. Let me go to Viviana. Viviana, good morning. You've got the mayor. What's your question?
Morning.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. I went down to Zuccotti Park, and I saw the Soviet flag flying as well. And there's people down there that their desire is to cripple our economic system. In your desire to appease these people that are in your face lawlessness, isn't it building up the potential for riots and violence? And if brutality occurs, is it not on your head, Mr. Mayor?
If this is something called the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, which says in America people have a right to say anything, no matter how much you disagree with them, with the exception of, if, for example, in a crowded theater as a joke, you can't yell fire. That's not protected by the Constitution, according to many Supreme Court decisions. But generally, people have a right to say what they want to say, regardless of whether you agree with it or not. And I don't necessarily agree. As a matter of fact, I disagree with a lot of what this protest is about. I think we should be out there creating jobs rather than trying to tear down some institutions. But nevertheless, the first and most important thing is the First Amendment, and I was satisfied with Brookfield's plan that they were going to permit lawful protests to continue. but their restrictions were they didn't want the liability or didn't think it was appropriate for their park and to let people, for example, sleep there. And so what they want to do is clean it up and say you can stay 24/7 if you want. Come and go.
Mr. Mayor, our time is up. It's been a busy morning, fast one. Thank you, sir. We'll catch up with you on Friday.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you. Have a good week. Have a good weekend, and we'll watch what's happening on Zuccotti Park. In fact, we're going to go there right here with Joe Bartlett.